topping the New York Times bestseller list.
The Shack is in the top 40 bestsellers of all history.
Having sold millions of copies since its release in 2007, the novel The Shack has become a publishing phenomenon. Now a feature film based on the influential book is to be released in March of 2017. What theology does the book teach? Should faithful Christians be concerned at its impact on the church? Documentary filmmaker Paul Flynn of Megiddo Films has released his latest work, The Shack, Its Dangerous Theology and Error, in an attempt to answer these questions. To watch this film free of charge, please visit our website at megiddofilms.org. That's megiddofilms.org.
You're listening to Megiddo Radio. Megiddo Radio is a radio ministry of Megiddo Media. For more, visit our website at megiddoradio.com. That's megiddoradio.com.
Everybody, welcome. This is Paul Flynn with Megiddo Radio for the 20th of February, 2017. Thank you all for tuning in. On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about a lot of different topics, but I'm going to try and focus on socialism. This is, well, probably going to be the title of the show, Why I Hate Socialism. And I know when people might look at a title like this, they might think purely political. Now, sometimes we can divorce our views politically from the scriptures as Christians, and that is very common. People treat the political realm as that is of this world, so we just, it's a worldly institution, and we just kind of go by secular arguments. And then there's the church, where we follow the Bible. The Bible is to be followed in all areas of life, whether we like it or not. If we are claiming to be Christians, we are to say that the highest law, the highest authority above all else is God, not man, not man's wisdom. And we should realize that man's wisdom and our own so-called wisdom is foolishness, especially if it is in opposition to what God has revealed in his word. But in this show, I want to talk about a lot of different things and try to keep it to an hour. So much has happened. There's so much happened. Look, Megiddo Media and its kind of roots, branches, whatever you call it, call them different divisions. You got Megiddo Review, which I was hoping I would have more articles out than I do. But there's a new one out that came out a few days ago, actually. If you like to read articles and things like that, it's on the Apostolic Sign Gifts and Miracles. And so that is up there on the Megiddo Review. Megiddo Films, try to focus on topics that affect the church at large. And they try to pick topics prayerfully that will bless people, and try to pick the most important issues, and try to pick different topics. Like, I think massively important issue is the issue of baptism. I did a film on that. Short little film of 30 minutes, the issue of the Sabbath, very important issue, not a fringe issue at all. And I had my friend and pastor of Aaron Reformed Baptist Church, Mark Fitzpatrick, on the show. When was it last? It was last Saturday week. It's like two shows ago. If you want to listen to that, and it was in response to a lot of people evidently don't believe in the Sabbath, especially those who claim to be Reformed and confessional, so on and so forth. And some won't be, you know, like some of these topics aren't exactly hot-button issues, as in, so by the grace of God, the Shack movie, which, keep that in your prayers, and I'm going to have to return to talking about the Shack soon enough, and not exactly sure what I'm going to talk about. There are topics, but I don't want to beat a dead horse. I've already dealt with the Shack in the movie, That was the whole point of the movie. In that hour and 20-minute movie, I've done, by the grace of God, the best that I can do in showing from the writings of William Paul Young and also of books that William Paul Young has endorsed, the kind of the systematic, the theology book about The Shack Revisited, by C. Baxter Kruger, and it's endorsed by William Paul Young. I quote from that, I've read that, I've also read books that would be in support of The Shack, and I try to quote, wherever possible, what they believe from people who defend it, and it's very consistent, and it teaches many different heresies. I think the main problem, there's many different problems, but the blasphemous representations of God is the one that jumps out at people, but also there's a false gospel in there, even if the true Jesus was being taught. Long and short, there's no comparison between it and Pilgrim's Progress, but we're going to return to that maybe in a week or two, because the movie is coming out at the start of March. But my film, The Shack, It's Dangerous Theology in Error, came out in March of last year, because I knew, and I put a lot of work into getting it out last year, because I knew from a lot of chatter around the place that it would probably come out soon. I didn't know exactly when. I was hoping it would never come out. Honestly, of course you don't. You never hope that this something like this will come out. And I suppose you're always trying to make sure you're not wasting your time. But still, a lot of people have read the book. And look, it is a salvation issue. If you believe in the God of the Shack, if you actually believe the God of the Shack, the God of your own imagination, you are not saved. Now, you might be a new believer. I'm not saying that everybody like the Shack is lost. Please don't misunderstand me here. I'm saying if you like the Jesus and the false trinity of the Shack, then it's another God, it's another Jesus, and another gospel. You can be young in the Lord and naive, and like something, but not fully understand it, but actually believe in the Jesus of the Bible. So for those who actually, I think there's only two camps. You're either incredibly naive, no discernment, should never be in Christian leadership at all. You mean maybe just saved or something like that, and in which case, show a bit more grace. I mean, there's some books I liked which were horrendous, which I liked right after I got saved, and it was only later on that I kind of went, ooh, this is not a good book. I think somebody gave me a book after I got saved, and I think it was Nicky Gumbel. I remember the exact title, but it was about the Alpha Course, and I read it. I was only saved 6 weeks to 2 months. At the time, I really liked it. As time grew, I was like, ooh, wow, that's really off there. And as time went on, I began to look back to it and was like, wow, this is a really, really, really bad book. Now, the person who gave it to me, really sweet person, the Lord, loves the Lord. I don't even think they've read the book. So I'm not saying every single person has read it, but if you like that kind of mystical, emotionally, false Jesus, basically, and false God the Father, if you like that, and that doesn't grieve you in any way, shape, or form, are you truly born again and saved? So it is, at its very core, a salvation issue. It is a gospel issue, because the book does teach a false gospel. We'll get onto this, Lord willing. I'll probably only do maybe 1 to 2 shows around the release date of the film. And I've also decided I'm not going to review the movie. I was contemplating going in to see the movie with a flashlight and, you know, basically write a load of notes and then come on and give a review of it. I've read the book. I read companion books about it. That's enough. It's heresy, don't really need to know anymore. It's a blasphemous image of God. I think I would be corrupting my view of God by going in there, because lest you corrupt yourselves and make an image. So I'm going to avoid it. and try not to give any more money than and yeah. Anyway, so that's Lord willing in a couple of weeks. Today we're going to be talking about, and this is a spiritual issue. What is going on politically? This is affecting lots of different people. Lots of different people have views, even though they're saying they're not political. So here we are. And the era of fake news, a very big problem. However, the term fake news came from the mainstream media, basically accusing alternative media of being fake news. In fact, it's actually the mainstream media that are mainstream, or the fake news itself. But the term gets, like, terms can get fired around the place and become kind of meaningless after a while. Where to begin? And why I'm talking about socialism, because it is the philosophy of socialism. One of the reasons I hate socialism is because it removes individual responsibility. It removes, if you do something wrong, it's not your fault, it's the fault of the community. Now, this can be followed in various different ways. It can be very inconsistent with certain people. And when I mean socialism now, I want to get down what I mean by socialism, because a lot of people who are socialistic or whatever, or collectivist, like, this is going to be a critique of any form of collectivism. Fascism, communism, progressivism. They're all variations of collectivism. And they are, and some of them, these are all tyrannical, totalitarian ideologies. They, because they believe as the state is God, and I'll explain that in a while, what I mean by that. You have, okay, you'll have Roman Catholicism, which is very, historically speaking, now I'm trying not to use language that is intentionally controversial, but it is fascist at its core. And I've done shows on that before. Social justice, that term, comes from a Jesuit priest. Now, I don't know if, and the Jesuit priest's name was Luigi Taparelli. That is borne out. There's some Catholic sources that say that as well. Some people, I've seen little mini documentaries and stuff like that where they link it back to Luigi Taparelli. And Pope Pius XIII, who penned Rerum Novarum, 1891. This is the time when the papal states had fallen, and Rome, the Roman Catholicism, was no longer a state. So you have to remember Roman Catholicism, it is both a state and a church. The Vatican is a state. Prior to 1866 to about 1870, there was the papal states, much larger area around Rome and various regions around there. So Rome is a political ideology. It is a merger between corporation and the state. The state needs to be big. And it's collectivist. And it involves itself in regulation of trade. And I'm going to get off too much in a tangent here, but that's what I mean by fascism. And fascism, as in the technical term, not in the same way that social justice warriors will go out, the violent ones, I'm not saying they're all violent, but the violent ones who go out with masks, as we saw in UCLA at Berkeley, where rioters trashed a lot of buildings, broke glass and things like that. When Milo Yiannopoulos, who's one of the editors at Breitbart News, was coming to speak, and I'm not a fan of Milo Yiannopoulos at all. I watched some of his videos and stuff like that. And it's amazing, you know, that the left talk about diversity and freedom of speech. It's quite interesting. Milo Yiannopoulos is a homosexual, and because he doesn't go along with the diversity police. Now, he's a troll, and he's kind of like, I don't know, what you call him, a semi-comedian, whatever you want to call it. He's vulgar, he's vile. I don't like listening to him. Sometimes, right, I was listening to him. He was on Sky News a couple of years ago, and it was like, wow, who is this guy? It was like he just he destroyed a feminist using their own statistics. Seems like a very intelligent guy, things like that. He shot up in the ratings, but the man's a homosexual. The man is just very vulgar in his perversion. That's what it is. Homosexuality is a perversion. And he needs to repent and he needs to trust in the Lord Jesus Christ. For no, views themselves and mankind should not inherit the kingdom of God. Now, he claims to be a Roman Catholic, so my only really unlikely chance that you're listening to this, you need to be born again. Any homosexual, by your lifestyle, if you're a thief, if you're a drunkard, if you're a homosexual, you, by that lifestyle, show you do not belong to Christ. I'm not saying that you're going to be perfect when you after you're regenerated, but because you're regenerate, you will produce new fruit, you will be a new creature in Christ. Come not to an institution that is apostatized from the truth, and doesn't even agree with Augustine anymore, and doesn't even agree with the church fathers, you know, claims to. And I'm not saying that that's the authority. It doesn't, it's abandoned scripture. But Rome doesn't say the scripture is the sole authority. They say it's the magisterium, plus tradition, plus the Bible. But it really is sola ecclesia. The church determines all things. The Bible doesn't get a look in, really. Except for when it can appear somehow to agree with it. But anyway, so Milo Yiannopoulos went to UCLA Berkeley and tried to speak there. So we saw a lot of, in the news, that's kind of where socialism goes. It becomes very self-policing, very, you don't need an Orwellian state sometimes to enforce it because the people will enforce it. And there's a lot of, I don't want to skip ahead too much here, but it's a lot of groupthink. There's no critical thinking. Everybody's just following along. And it depends what the narrative of the media is putting out at any one time, because everybody is, it's all group responsibility. That's what social justice is about. Social justice can be anything from one group, maybe men earn more than women in a particular job, you know, it's a myth. The wage gap is a complete myth. It's illegal to pay a woman less than a man for the same job. It doesn't happen. And people who usually whinge about it are in jobs where they're paid exactly the same as men. I do not know what they're talking about. They're usually comparing apples with oranges. The gender pay gap is a complete myth. It is a feminist lie. And if you're a born-again Christian, look, there's probably going to be a lot of things. Look, this is not, how do you get saved? You turn from your sin and your folly and your own will to Christ. And you trust upon him and him alone. But when you get saved, as we all do, right after, we have a lot of baggage. And I'm not saying that we have to know all of these things. But we have to rethink everything that we thought was just a given. Within reason. There's a lot of strange movements on the internet. But anyway, so and usually people will give out the so-called gender pay gap. I'll give you one example that I heard one day. Somebody was comparing what is earned. There's a private school, and then there's a state school, and in the state school, like for example, in my case, I get paid like probably maybe half what the state school gets, you know, secondary school and things like that. Is that discrimination? No, that's just basically that's the unions, and they protested and they got a massively overbloated pay for teachers. Sorry, but that's kind of the way I feel about it. The private schools are more driven by the market, generally. Not always, but generally. There's some interference from the state and things like that. And yes, look, I teach English as a foreign language. There's not a shortage of us, I'll be honest. You know, you kind of fall into it if your college degree didn't quite work out. I have a biomedical science degree. I loved the course at the time. Hated the job. Just my personality didn't. I'm a bit of a goof at work, and I like to have a bit of fun and things like that. I just like to, you know, talk to people, interact, things like that. And that's just my personality. And some people will love the hospital laboratory. There's nothing wrong with that, but it just didn't suit me. So now, the time when that happened, I wasn't a Christian, and I think if I was a Christian back then, I hate looking back like this, coulda, woulda, shoulda, but I probably would have been able to deal with it a lot better, and I probably would have stuck it out, and maybe I, who knows, maybe I'd still be in there, but the Lord has provided me with a great job that I really like. I really like it, and it just suits me down to the ground. I work four hours a day. I travel a lot, you know, on the train. I get a lot of work done for this show. It just works out perfectly for me. And despite all of my bad choices that I've made over the years, the Lord has preserved me, and thank the Lord for that. But anyway, but getting back to, I'm going to be paid less than somebody in a private school, because they're in unions and all this kind of thing. And the whole idea that the difference between capitalism and this kind of, and socialism here, especially when it comes to teachers, is teachers, if they feel aggrieved, if they feel oppressed by the wage they're getting and it's not fair or something like that, and it's not just, this is what social justice is about, then they will picket and all this kind of thing, and they will protest. Biblically speaking, I'm not going to get into all the nuances and all this, because we don't really have time in one show, and I've dealt with it in other shows. Biblically speaking, there is the idea of private property. There's no such thing as an unjust wage. If you're getting paid 50 cents an hour, and you agree to it in a contract, unless it's been somebody put a gun to your head, but that probably didn't happen. But even if that is the case, you didn't do it voluntarily, so it's kind of null and void. But if you agree in a contract, two people, one person says you'll do this amount of work, the other person says this is how much I will pay you, and there's a parable in the scriptures about this. I can't remember the exact part of scripture, but it's man goes into the field, he's paid, there's one talent, and there's different people come at different parts of the day, and they all get paid the same amount. Is there anything wrong with that? No. There's actually nothing biblically wrong with that at all. Now, so the person, the two parties come to an agreement, and that is what that's what the other person should receive for the work and things like that, because it's up to the boss what they pay. And look, and if it's not enough for the other party, it's like, maybe the wages are terrible. Say somebody offers to pay me 50 cents an hour for teaching, and I go, no, that's not worth it. No, you just turn it down, and you go somewhere else that pays higher wages. Giving an example of somewhere where this was massively successful, the United States, in the 19th century, up until about the 1920s, was it a perfect capitalistic system? No, it went back and forth, and they had central banks. We might get into that some stage in a while. Andrew Jackson fought off the banks, almost paid for it with his life, and Abraham Lincoln printed greenbacks and things like that. But the United States grew massively and rapidly because it had a much smaller, more limited government and enterprise. And America wasn't exactly flush with cash and all that, but back after the Revolution and things like that. But it grew massively. And in a lot of ways, you know, Europe stagnated. If you compare countries, Protestant, I mean this in a very loose sense, because there's very few countries that are actually Protestant. They just kind of paid a lot of lip service to Christianity and the Bible. And I would include the United States in that. But if you compare the United States and Mexico, even the United States and Canada, and now, today the United States is very, very different, because under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the government tripled in size. It became much more socialistic. it was influenced by, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was influenced by, was it John Augustus Ryan? Or was it Paul Ryan? Paul Ryan is the Speaker of the House. I always get them mixed up. But anyway, John Augustus Ryan, who believed in living wage and all this kind of stuff. The things that progressives believe in, this is Roman Catholic teaching on economics. They usually hate the Catholic Church, and then people are left scratching their heads when Bernie Sanders, an out-and-out socialist, goes to the Vatican to talk about economic issues, social justice, and all this. He's actually, they're actually completely at one when it comes to maybe the slight disagreements here and there. There are, you know, a few things here and there. But fundamentally, with there's an official teaching on social teaching of the church, the Roman Catholic Church I'm speaking about now, and it's called the Compendium of the Social Doctrine of the Church. That's official teaching. That's what they print on it. It's official teaching. And it's not, they hate capitalism. The Roman Catholic Church hates capitalism, but it also does not like communism. It thrives in a blend between, and what I mean by pure communism would be where the state owns everything. You wouldn't even have a currency, and that was kind of borne out a number of years ago with a kind of view of, which was basically communism, Marxism, by, what's his name again? Joseph. The Zeitgeist movie, anyway. The Zeitgeist movie and the project which it was pushing, the Venus Project, was very, very communistic. State owns everything. They don't really put it like that. They call it a resource-based economy, but the currency disappears, and they say the currency is the problem of all things. Basically, private property. Biblical, for the Christian out there, we must believe the scriptures. You don't have to know about all the political things and all the things that are happening in the world. You don't. However, we must believe the scriptures, and Lord willing, we grow in the grace and knowledge of the truth. The eighth commandment says, thou shalt not steal. But all of the commandments, which is a summarization of the moral law of God, is exactly that, a summarization. There's a positive and negative aspect to that. Thou shalt not steal, don't take from other people, and you, how would I put it, talks about theft, cause of theft, talks about need and things like that. Yeah, it's basically about theft. But usually what my point was going to make was there's a positive and negative aspect to the commandments. For example, thou shalt not kill has a positive and negative side to it. What I mean by that is you don't kill somebody else, but you also preserve your own life. The violation of thou shalt not kill if you, for example, commit suicide. In the eighth commandment, which is recorded in Exodus 20, verse 15. It is a repudiation of collectivism. Thomas Watson, in his excellent book called The Ten Commandments, I would recommend every Christian to read this book. I don't say that with many books. The church says a very poor understanding of the moral law. This needs to be fixed. And I think this is a book that will really help. 17th century Puritan by the name of Thomas Watson. The Ten Commandments. Anybody. You know, there are books for people who are very theologically minded. Systematic theology. The Herman Witsiuses in the world and all that. And I don't recommend necessarily that for everybody. But I recommend this for everybody. It's written in a very pastoral way. Question and answer a lot of the time. It goes through step by step. I would recommend buy this book. I haven't read other books by Thomas Watson. I have them on my shelf, but I haven't read them yet. And by the grace of God, I will get through them. But it is one of my favorite books. It really is. People ask about recommendation for books and for making separate videos. Honestly, I don't have time. And that's why there wasn't a Thursday show last week. It's been a bit hectic and a bit crazy lately, but what else is new? And it's not the reason why it's so hectic and crazy is not because of Megiddo Radio, Megiddo Films. It's more just I have a day job and I have two children and I have a wonderful wife who I want to spend a lot of time with. So, you know, it's stuff like that. And, you know, so. But Thomas Watson writes in page 167 of the Ten Commandments, and this is, again, talk about theft, for confutation of the doctrine of community, that all things are common, and one man has a right to another's estate. This is confuted by Scripture, or refuted. When thou comest into the corn of thy neighbor, thou shalt not move a sickle unto thy neighbor's corn. Deuteronomy 23, verse 25. Property must be respected. God has set his eighth commandment as a hedge about a man's estate, and his hedge cannot be broken without sin. If all things be common, then there is no theft. And so this commandment would be in vain. And the principle of private property is all the way throughout the scripture, but get this book. So private property is taught. That's the old principle by which capitalism, what it's called. And you either see individual responsibility. People have individual responsibility in business and other things. And they, whether they do a good job, get paid more, get paid less, if they do worse maybe, or if their skill is more needed than another person, then it's going to be more valuable and things like that. That way, stupid, useless degrees disappear because they're no longer needed. People aren't going to spend the money going to university to study maybe sociology or whatever else, and there's worse things than that. Gender studies. See, when you incentivize going to college, then everybody gets a degree. The degree becomes worthless, especially if you've got a degree in uselessness at the University of Partydom. That's what happened in Ireland. The country I live in, Republic of Ireland, a lot of people have degrees. And a lot of people don't use them. They use them in other things. I'm not doing what I'm involved in. It's fine when it's a good degree, if it's something like medicine or dentistry or something like that. Look, for jobs like that, veterinary science, you need to go to college. But when it comes to really, really terrible degrees, people who should not go to college do go to college, and that drives the bubble of university and other education, which takes people out of trades, carpentry, electricians, and all that. They should be learning their trade 18, 19, 20, and off working, not wasting their time. But that's from a very economic standpoint. But the fundamental reason I hate socialism is because, well, part of it's free stuff. Politicians will get up, promise free education, free healthcare, free this, free that. Everything's free. No, taxes go up in order to pay for that. And what you're doing is you're killing the productive part of the economy and you're transferring it over. I'm talking about in a pragmatic way. It doesn't work. It kills the productive. It disincentivizes hard work. And it gives money towards the unproductive, which is the government. Look, government makes decisions based on popular opinion often. And often popular opinion isn't good. And one of the I hate socialism is because it believes that men have a right to another person's stuff. That's what it is. If somebody's sick and needs help, yes, Christians should help. If somebody's, whatever the case is, you know, in medicine, if somebody's really sick, you help them out and things like that. Things aren't free. Healthcare isn't free. But when you get the state involved, it always drives up the cost of it. And so it's never free. Same with education. Somebody pays for it, and it's usually the state just runs out of money. It can't afford all this free stuff that these politicians got elected. But the public wants the free stuff. It sounds wonderful when you're going to say, we're going to tax those nasty rich people who you're really envious of and you really don't like. You know, they'll talk about the 1% that Bernie Sanders always talks about during his debates, especially that debate that he had with Ted Cruz. I've talked about Ted Cruz before, not a massive fan of him, but comparison with Bernie Sanders, massively different. And there was a point in the debate, actually, where a woman in the crowd who was a business owner, I think she employed almost 50 people, and she asked a question about what would he do. I can't remember the exact context of the question, but he was asked about, you know, because Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act was brought in, like Obama's socializing of the health care basically meant if you have over 50 people employed by your business, then you have to provide them with health care and all this kind of stuff. Again, it's we have more rights, and I'm going to talk about the rights issue and the problem of having more rights and what it really means in a second. It gives the government an incentive to control more. It does. That's what it is. It's inviting government control of everything because people see the government as God. That's why atheism and socialism, they kind of really go together. I'm not saying every socialist is an atheist or every atheist is a socialist. You get some atheists who are capitalistic. But generally speaking. But in this question, she asked, well, how do she wants to grow her business. I think she had a hair salon or something like that. But she couldn't go beyond 50 because she probably wasn't earning that much and it was more hassle to grow the business beyond 50 and things like that. And Bernie Sanders just, well, you're probably not going to want to hear this, he said. But basically he said, well, you should. If you've got more than 50 employees, you should give them health care and you should pay for every single benefit ever because the government's not doing it. That's not a Goldman Sachs. That's somebody who's barely surviving and employing people, could grow their business, and cannot. That's just one example. I could give many different examples of how government regulation, socialism, all that, kills progress, kills innovation, kills drive to grow, and it does. Now, doesn't mean in the absence of socialism and government regulation that there is no laws. No, there's contracts. If you have contracts between two people, one person breaks it, then you can bring the person to court and just say somebody there's a contract to pay a certain amount per hour and the other person doesn't pay, well, then they have a legal right to, that would be breach of contract and things like that. That's capitalism. And you say, well, what if the wages aren't very high? Well, you kind of have to go into a job that's more profitable and things like that. It's something that's needed. If it's needed, there will be money in it. And if it's not needed, then there won't be. Unless it's incentivized. And if something's incentivized by the government, what they're really doing is taking something that isn't worth that much and inflating the price. So if you've got, I realize this is a very different show, but some people look into this kind of stuff. I've been studying economics longer than I've been a Christian. But if you take the housing, for example, in Ireland, there was a massive property bubble and it burst. And the house prices started falling because of that. Because, well, you know, people weren't buying houses anymore and people wanted to move houses. And they lost a lot of off the value of it. But the price of housing was going up, I don't know, some crazy percent, a couple of percent every year, and people just thought it would continue forever, which was insane. It doesn't make any sense. The house isn't producing anything. It's not changing. It's not becoming more profitable in a tangible asset kind of way. just sitting there. It's just bricks and mortar. It really shouldn't, unless there's a half a demand and there's not really a lot, but there was actually more houses, so the fundamentals were completely wrong. But anyway, if you have a lot of houses and, okay, they're overvalued. So rather than say, okay, they're still overvalued. Let's get away, let's get the regulation out of the way, and let's let the price of the house fall to what it actually is worth in the market. No, they never do that, because they see that as a problem. Falling prices is not good. And they'll just give you a pragmatic, practical way of how that would work. Just say, houses at the moment are usually selling for maybe 250,000 euro, I'm guessing now here. They used to be 400,000. People see it as a terrible, you know, the economy's doing better when prices are going up. No, not really. Not if that house is inflated in value. What if you got rid of the regulations and it dropped the value of the house is really about 100,000, for example? Well, then more people could afford to buy it. And that would take people out of the rental sector. Less people would be renting. But that isn't happening. And what has happened at the moment has been a bit of freezing credit and things like that. So people aren't buying houses anymore. So now more people are renting. And now in this country, there's a rental crisis going on right now. And rents are going up crazy here. So, and that's just one example of the unintended consequences of trying to manage the economy. They try to manage one area, but there's another blowback somewhere else. There's always unintended consequences. Let the market set the price of it, because that's the actual value of it. If you have to prop something up, it means it's worth less than that. Otherwise, you wouldn't have to prop it up. But anyway, I want to focus on just the whole idea of free stuff again. Like, it's the belief, socialism belief, progressivism, whatever you want to call it. Like, these are all titles for collectivism. This is what I'm critiquing here. It's a belief that you have a right to free stuff. Now, this goes back, if you want to go back long enough, Aristotle, Thomas Aquinas. Aristotle was very much, you could say Thomas Aquinas, okay, they were, you know, historically speaking, how far were they removed? Maybe like 1,500 years from each other, but that's where Aquinas got a lot of these ideas. And Aquinas, if you look at Aquinas' writings, I think it's in the Summa Theologica, if a man had a severe enough need, this is Roman Catholic economic policy, and he's an actual doctor. Unlike, okay, Augustine is a doctor of the Roman Catholic Church as well, but the Roman Catholic Church doesn't really follow Augustine, especially when it comes to the doctrine of grace. So that's what I mean by actual doctor, because Roman Catholic priests actually read Thomas Aquinas. I actually interviewed a number of years ago Richard Bennett of Breen Beacon. He's a former Roman Catholic priest, and he was talking about how they studied Thomas Aquinas. So that's what I mean by actual doctor, not just in name only, not just quoting from here and here and claiming. Usually what Roman Catholicism does, is takes a quote from church history, and I'm discovering this more and more, and tortures it, and makes it sound like, well, they have this unanimous consent of the fathers. Sadly, that is not the case. Well, not sadly, that's not the case. This is not the case. They're twisting. Not just scripture, but also often, not always, but often a lot of early church fathers. Anyway. So Thomas Aquinas, in the writings of Thomas Aquinas, you can find justification for anything from liberation theology, which I've also dealt with in the show. If you type in Richard Bennett into the search bar at MegiddoRadio.com, and you can listen to that program. Richard Bennett, actually, he was in Trinidad. Was it Trinidad and Tobago? It's probably modern-day Trinidad and Tobago. It's Trinidad, anyway, when he was there. And he was a Roman Catholic priest. And he was involved in kind of a socialist communist uprising in the country. And we were talking about this in the program, that you go back to Aquinas, and Aquinas wrote, I don't know if we actually had this quote on the program, but Need has made it common. And if you don't want to read through all the Summa Theologica, I haven't. I'm not saying I have. There's a collection of economic writings. If you just look up, go on maybe Amazon.co.uk or Amazon.com in the United States. And there is a collection of Aquinas' writings on politics. Just call Aquinas' political writings and French-sounding guy, anyway, who edited it. And you probably might be able to find that. That was compiled back in the 1960s, I think it was. So you can just read that, and you can get Aquinas' political thinking. And it's just basic collection of it. And if you want to study this more. And Aquinas' writings, the whole idea was, how do you determine what is need? The state basically determined what is need. This community needs this. This subsection needs this. This group is oppressed. So we have to go in. We have to guarantee their rights. And basically it's more power. The European Union does this a lot as well. Under the ruse, and it sounds great, we are giving you your fundamental human rights, and we're giving you extra rights. Doesn't this sound wonderful? We're giving you extra rights. Not the proper rights that people should have, like the right to private property, the right to life. Usually people who are for this have no problem with exterminating a baby if they're an inconvenience. And that's often the case. You have to watch the abortion language. They claim all this stuff about human rights, but if you're still in the womb and your mother doesn't particularly want to have you, then you're expendable. When you allow the general consensus to determine morality, and when the general consensus is against God, and it's really hatred of God, when you're trying to change the abortion laws or the value of an unborn child, could you imagine if we're saying, we're going to change the murder laws. It's okay to murder if you're its mother and it's in the womb. No, let's redefine everything. Let's call it a medical procedure. But that's the left. Don't call it what it is. I saw the scan of my twins, right? My two beautiful little babies. And that's the time. They were 7 weeks. My wife is 7 weeks pregnant. And there was two distinct heartbeats at 7 weeks old. You tell me that's not a human being. You're lying, and people don't want to know. They want to sacrifice children at the altar of convenience. People want to live lasciviously. People want to bring up rape and incest, which is a tiny, tiny percentage of overall abortion cases. But even then, they don't want to admit that every other case is completely wrong. It's just an excuse. But even if you did take in that, why not? I mean, I'm actually in agreement with Ben Shapiro on this when he talked about, you know, rapists and child molesters should be maybe castrated. And maybe talk about the death penalty. Yeah, I'd be in favor of that. Yeah. So the exact punishments aren't laid out in scripture for such a thing, but you know, well, rape is actually mentioned as a death penalty, I believe, in the old. But that's the. Be careful with that. There's a general equity. I mean, it's not that we can't have death penalties outside of murder. But you know, if you kill your child, biblically speaking, the state has a moral obligation because of Genesis 9:6, because the death penalty was given to all nations, not just Israel. Given to all nations. This is prior to the foundation of Israel. That whosoever sheddeth man's blood, actually quoted here, so I'm not wrong here. But they're not for justice, really, proper justice, if you want to call it individual justice. Whosoever sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. And that image is what the left and socialism want to shatter. And they're willing to do anything to eradicate it, the eradication of marriage. Because socialism at its very heart is anti-Christian. Because it's very much a rejection of the God of the Bible. So who's going to take care of everything? Who's going to play that role of God? It doesn't matter what you claim. If you look at it, everybody always has a God. They depend either on themselves, or they depend on somebody else, their absolute leader. But usually, it goes towards government, and government becomes the God of the atheist or agnostic or whatever. And the bigger, the better. That's why the European Union is so popular among many of these radical leftists who are really the real fascists, even though they're the anti-fascists. The fascists of today are the anti-fascists. What they just do is label anybody who doesn't agree with them as homophobic, transphobic, Nazi. And that way they can justify being violent towards them or wishing violence upon them. And I have heard this kind of rhetoric in Ireland too. It's not just in America or England. It's all over the place, but it gets kind of laughed at. I've heard people talking about how they wish violence on people like Nigel Farage. I don't agree with Nigel Farage on everything. But when it comes to the European Union, national sovereignty, why not? But because everybody's so emotional, and because the bigger the government, the better. The bigger their God, the better. The more safe they feel. How much bigger can you get? You're going back to the tower, or at least they're trying to. And I'm not talking about a literal Tower of Babel. I'm just talking about that they're trying to go back. Even when the symbols of, interestingly enough, I guess the building in Strasbourg is like a base on the Tower of Babel, which is kind of spooky. But anyway, so Genesis chapter 11, where they said, go up, and this is verse 4, go to, let us build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven, and let's make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And God said, in this is verse 6, that behold, the people is one, and they all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, verse 7, go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, and that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth. And they left off to build a city. And, you know, basically God, where all the languages of the world come from, and they were all one. And the evil man's heart, and they built together, and their folly increased. Government will solve all problems. And so when that narrative is abandoned in any degree, not even people who represent the God of the Bible, but in any degree, people lose their minds because they see, for example, the mainstream media as the custodians or the guardians of truth. CNN, New York Times, Washington Post, MSNBC, on and on. BBC, Sky News, they have to be telling the truth because they're all saying the same thing. Or are they? So then you go against these people, and then you're seen as fake news. Because it's gotten to the point now where they determine what is truth and what is among certain people. However, a lot of these groups are losing credibility and losing ratings, CNN especially. I mean, one of the ways to see this, actually, if you go to, and I mean, this isn't the best way, but it's one way of seeing it. If you go onto any CNN video on the YouTube channel, most of their videos have 50% dislikes. And, okay, if it's maybe a Christian channel that's popular, you might understand it, but generally, if you've got 1.8 million subscribers, you probably have people on there actually like you. But, yeah. Oh man, I mean, there's just so much fake news at the moment. And both sides are calling fake news, and the other one's saying fake news. Now, the left has no problem firing out the title fake news, because they get to determine reality and truth, and we all have to follow in line. Otherwise, we are horrible, racist bigots who deserve to be beaten up. And people will say, you know, I've heard this kind of stuff. You know, the same people will say, live and let live, and I'm all for freedom of blah, blah, blah. You know, after Brexit, I mean, I heard people saying, I'd love to punch him in the face, and, you know, Nigel Farage. And it's just complete hypocrisy. It's all virtue signaling. It's all, well, we've progressed. We've gotten better. We're so much better now. We're so much more enlightened than those idiots of the past. They just need to follow us. Which it leads on to, you know, education will solve everything. If we just let in all these hordes of poor Muslims. Now, a lot of them are suffering. I don't want to belittle that in any way, shape, or form in the Syrian conflict, and a lot of it's horrible. A lot of them are not refugees. A lot of them are economic migrants. But be that as it may, we'll pretend that they're all refugees. The radical left has a huge problem with national sovereignty. So it now has a massive problem. Just get the story in front of me here. With deportations, massive problem with, you know, forget about legal immigration, forget about going through the channels, we'll just skip around it and then get a sympathy vote. I mean, CNN was doing a lot of stories about people who were sent back to Mexico, and it just became kind of a footnote or not even mentioned that the person was a felon who, you know, maybe forged a Social Security number. They, you know, it's just like, you know, it's like we're having sympathy for criminals. Over here, people are all nervous about Trump. And look, I'm not the biggest fan. There's ways to criticize Trump legitimately, but the left has gone so over the top with its criticism, it's lost all credibility. It's just gone so. And it's actually going to help. If it continues going this way, Trump will get reelected probably with a landslide in the next election, because they have lost. They're just killing themselves. Part of me is loving it. They're just destroying themselves and just showing themselves just to be hysterical babies. And part of me doesn't like it, because it's lies, it's slander, it's not truth. I can't even stand to listen to the radio anyway, going home anymore. But just, it's, you know, in Ireland even, it's just regurgitated New York Times and CNN reports. And then that's reality. And that's all a lot of the rest of the world hears. Why not get somebody on from Breitbart? I'm not the biggest fan of Breitbart. You know, I think Breitbart's one of the best, don't get me wrong. Breitbart's one of the best, I reference to them. I don't think they're perfect. But Breitbart's one of the better news organizations out there. When I say better, I don't say perfect. InfoWars, the sad day when InfoWars is kind of one of the better sources of media out there, but this is where we're at. And source check everything, and they can be a bit sloppy at times. Who else? Daily Wire, which is the website, you know, Ben Shapiro, again, don't agree with Ben Shapiro. A lot of these guys have different views on the right. If you want to get people asked sometimes, well, if all this media is fake, where's proper news? Look, and there's no kind of news agency that's 100% perfect. I'm not going to be 100% perfect even. I'm going to make mistakes even sometimes when I'm talking about various stories at times inadvertently, you know, not trying to deceive anybody, but that'll happen at times. And there can be mistakes made. But it's gotten to the point where there's an agenda against the White House by the media, and anybody who's got a bias against the right just laps it up. It's an echo chamber. And because the left isn't being heard to and bowed down to, it's now been compared to like a kind of an Orwellian state. Seriously. If they don't get their way, they don't see their progressive socialist utopia, at least advancing in the direction of Sweden, now the probably the rape capital of the West because of a lot of the Muslim migrants, and that is official news. They don't care, but you see, they don't care about this guy. You mention this stuff to people, they'll change. It's all virtue signaling. They don't care about the women and children. Do not care. They just care about looking smug. Not even looking smug, that's not the right way to say it, but looking virtuous. But it's all vacuous at the end of the day. In the Daily Wire, in an article written on the 15th of February by Michael Gazvini, wrote the following headline, Islamophobic, Saudi Arabia deports 40,000 Muslim Pakistanis, citing terrorism concerns. Where are the protests against Saudis for being so Islamophobic? Of course, it's a ridiculous claim, as it says at the end of the paragraph. It doesn't even put it in quotes. You know, talks about, look, in the Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro was dead against, well, this isn't Ben Shapiro writing this, but he was dead against Trump and Hillary Clinton being in the White House. If I was voting, I wouldn't have voted for either of them. They don't fulfill biblical requirements that I, as a covenanter, would view as important. I believe that models for countries that are not under this, and probably the United States too, because they were under British rule at the time, the Solemn League and Covenant of 1641? In the 1640s, anyway, which was around the time of the Westminster Confession of Faith, the Westminster Assembly. But not to get too sidetracked on that, but look, God's law comes first, not the constitution of any nation. Seriously, it comes first. We have to be Christians first, following Christ first, above anything else. But as it says at the end of this article, is Saudi Arabia immune from the charge of Islamophobia because its leaders are Muslim? And this is a Sunni, it doesn't matter what Sunni, Shia, but Sunni Muslim nation, very Muslim, sometimes funds terrorism when it suits them. There was a leaked WikiLeak for Hillary Clinton, where Hillary Clinton basically said in one of the emails, I'm trying to remember it exactly, that she believed, I'm trying to remember. Double check this now, just in case I'm wrong on this. But Saudi Arabia was funding ISIS. It's been so long since I've seen it now. But yeah, double check all that, just in case I'm remembering it wrong. But yeah, there's a lot of links between them. But when they have it in their own country, or better yet, as the article writes, is it the left's entire hysterical crusade against Trump's Islamophobia, a red herring meant to delegitimize the political opposition? The bottom line is that every sovereign state, whether it be Saudi Arabia, Israel, or the United States, has the right to defend its borders and regulate who comes into the country. Every sovereign state has a right, perhaps even a duty, to protect its citizens against foreign threats, particularly terrorist threats. Yes. And even people were on, what's this thing? This was over in Ireland. People were talking about, there was one guy on, and he was talking about, oh, I love New York, but I'm scared about Trump. And I was just like, what in the world? There's seven terrorist nation hotspots, and he's putting a temporary freeze on them entering the country in order to vet them better. And that has got Irish people nervous. Or people with an Irish background, things like that. Or anybody else with any other background. I even said in this interview that I was listening to that there's 50,000. And they were nervous about the 50,000. This is what we don't even know. 50,000 undocumented Irish citizens. And they're like, what will happen to them? Here's what should happen to illegal. What does illegal mean? A synonym for you're a criminal. If you're doing something illegal, it is a crime. It's illegal immigration. You don't respect the laws of that nation. Why should they let you stay? Why? It's like, when did... You know, this back in the 90s was even something that the Republicans and Democrats and other nations agreed on. You take a speech from Bill Clinton back in the 1990s, take it until now, and he'd be called... Well, he actually wouldn't be called because the darling mainstream media is so politically aligned with the Democrats, it wouldn't matter what they did, they would frame it in another way. And now they see blood in the water with the National Security Advisor, General Flynn, stepping down there recently. So they've gone hyperbolic. Everything's just so exaggerated. And there's a lot of people who fancy themselves as journalists, and they just share it without even fact-checking or anything. The level, there's a mix, most of the reason is because of, it's ideology. They're not journalists anymore, they're propagandists. They believe a certain way, and they're looking for echo chambers and just to agree with them. There's no counterpoints, there's no argumentation, it's all just vilify the other side and attribute motive. Other than the motive that was stated. Regardless of who's in the White House, even if it was Hillary Clinton, as much as she should be in prison for deleting 33,000 emails and other things that she has done, and breaches of security and other things that have gotten people in a lot more trouble than she got into, if she's the leader of the nation, you should support her. Where she does something right and pray for the leaders of nations, even if they're wicked. Okay? If they're doing horrible things, you pray against them. And that they will come to Christ. So that they may be godly examples. Okay? So we're supposed to pray for all men, kings, and people of all different levels and occupying different layers of society. So, at the moment, it's very obvious that there's an alliance between the left and the Muslims. Both want to destroy the old world because they both don't like it. And they all want to, they're very different views of this, but recreate it in their own view. Islam wants Sharia law. And if you look at the statistics for people who want Sharia law, in Western countries, it's about 50%. Not every Muslim. Hashtag not every Muslim. Anyway, joke. Wants Sharia law in the nation. Some will just see it as they go to their mosque and the state is separate. But there's a majority in most Muslim, definitely Muslim nations, but even Western nations. I think in the United States, I think it's about 30 or 40%, but off the top of my head, I can't really remember. It's the numbers are around that. They're surprisingly big, but they want Sharia law as the law of the land. Looking stands to reason. That's what they believe. That's who they believe God is. But if you have a system, look, one of the, if you want to call it a travel ban, or this, you know, the temporary freeze on immigrants from, excuse me, I'm going to sneeze here. Sorry. On citizens of Iran. And how do they protest? They protest death to America on the streets of Iran. Oh, that's why don't we let them in? There was an Iraqi soldier who put out a video. Can't remember the name of the soldier. Actually, it was shared around by Milo Yiannopoulos. But might be able to find it on his page. But he was talking about, I think he was serving in Iraq, and he said if he walked around in Iraq, he'd be killed. He walked outside the compound. They hate Americans. If a lot of these genocidal, suicidal terrorists of the Palestinian side for Hamas get within an inch of an Israeli, they're going to want to kill them, even if it takes their own life. It's their ideology. It is what they've been taught from a young age. Now, is every Palestinian like that? No. But you have to remember the Palestinians voted in Hamas, an organization that does not believe that Israel has a right to exist and that it should be driven into the sea. If you don't know this, you're either ignorant or you're at least intellectually dishonest. The material is out there on what Hamas believe, what Hezbollah believes, and all these other groups. If you're a sovereign nation, do you just kind of go in, an ideology that hates us, wants us dead? I'm going to give you another example. Your house. Just say it's your house. And a load of strangers come along who maybe need shelter and all this. But you know that they hold to an ideology that believes in, allows for rape of captive slave women. This is in the Quran. Would you, just to be seen as tolerant, allow them into your home? If you're so foolish, whose responsibility is it? Now, of course, we would not do so, but we like to say, oh, just let them in. Look, as a Christian, and if people from, it doesn't matter who it is, are in your country, you share the gospel with them, you love your neighbor as yourself. But the government's role is different. Government's role laid out in Romans 13. For example, the government has the sword. The church does not have the sword, and it's not allowed to take. For example, look, the state is allowed to execute the death penalty, but no one else is. It's a little bit different in Islam, which, you know, it throws people off buildings and stuff like that. But they might say, well, that's been carried out on the state level. Anyway. The role of the state, and even this whole immigration thing, right? Do we believe what the Bible says about the role of the state? What does it say about Romans 13? Every soul will be subjected to the higher powers. And for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. That's verse 3, verse 13. Just want to skip through. Yeah, look. Verse 4. For he is a minister of God to thee for good. Okay? And even in your home, just like a microcosm analogy, the father is to protect his home. And a ruler should take steps that will minimize. I'm not saying that they control everything, they can't stop every bad thing happening. But if they know that there's a severe threat and an army of ISIS jihadis are there and an ideology that it's based upon Islam and the Quran and Hadith and Muslim ideology and Muhammad, that's coming across. It's coming across in waves in Europe where you see the rape statistics skyrocketing in Germany, Norway, Sweden, especially Sweden. Look at the statistics in Sweden, if they actually publish a lot of them. it's just become disgusting. They have sacrificed the women and the children and the next generation. Some children have been raped and molested by migrants. At the altar of virtue signaling leftists who are just so, I don't know how you say, drunk with their own smugness. But look at the role of government. For he's a minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. You can't say that about the Christian role. The role of the state is different. But he's a minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. All the way throughout the Old Testament, there is the concept of national sovereignty, the sovereign states, and you need a permission to enter, even the armies, and enter in. And because of the emotionalism that has led this story, people have created lies and slander. There's an article that was released, and I'll just try and finish up here, by the Federalist, and there's probably a lot more. There are a lot more fake news stories. An article written on the 6th of February 2017 by Daniel Payne, and he wrote the article called 16 Fake News Stories Reporters Have Run Since Trump Won. Journalists, media types, reporters have two choices. You can fix these problems, or you can watch your profession go down in flames. Yeah, and a lot of them are willing to do whatever it takes. One of the false news stories that went out was, this article reports that after Trump's electoral victory on November 8th, rumors began circulating that multiple transgender teens had killed themselves in response to election results. Look, and even if that did happen, that's hardly a responsibility of someone else. But it turned out to be completely false and fake. Another fake news story was, Rango was something a bit more well-known. Here we go. Martin Luther King Jr. bust controversy. This was completely fake, but reported on the news. On January 20th, Time reporter Zeke, I think that's how you pronounce, Miller wrote about a bust of Martin Luther King Jr. had removed from the White House. This caused a flurry of controversy on social media until Miller issued a correction, like they always do. It's really disgusting. As Time put it, Miller had apparently not even asked anyone in the White House if the bust had been removed. He simply assumed it had been because, quote, he had looked for it and had not seen it. So, you know, confirmation bias is wonderful there. And on and so forth. And there's loads of them. You just can't keep up with them. So much so, when I see something, somebody says, oh, this person said this, and I'll go home, watch the whole clip, because people couldn't be bothered to listen to 3 minutes of a clip. They're just a little soundbite of 5 seconds. That's what they hear on the radio. That's what they hear on the news over here or any different country. That's all. People don't fact check. It gets to the point where I don't believe anything they say anymore. It's a complete waste. I try to listen to everything from different points of view in order to do this show and write articles and things like that. Have a rough idea what's going on. Can't know everything. But it's just gotten to the point where these news organizations, they're not news organizations anymore. They're propagandists. And if you're helping them without even checking them to a certain amount, then you're helping spread their propaganda. And a lot of time is because they agree with it. Vilify and slander the opposition so that whatever you do to them is justifiable. This is where we're going. The new fascists are the anti-fascists. They just, anybody who's their political opponent is a fascist. It all goes back to this old Marxist idea of the oppressor versus the oppressed. You label the other side, the oppressor. Same thing happens in Ireland, right? It never seems to matter how much of a dark history Ireland has. We have a dark history. Ireland has a good reputation in a lot of ways. I don't know why. We had a terrorist problem for quite a while, fomented by an anti-British bigotry, justified by the labeling Britain as the oppressor, and Ireland was the oppressed, so it doesn't matter what they did. Blow them up? Well, they started it. People quote 800 years, even though, if you go back 800 years, the supposed rule of Britain over Ireland, it was the Pope at the time, I think it was Pope Adrian, and this is mainline history even, told the King of England to invade Ireland and take control of it. So it was really Rome who ran Ireland for the first couple of hundred years. You want to blame anybody? They don't blame the Pope, though. Same with Black Lives Matter. The oppressors are the police. So the Black Lives Matter are okay to say, fry them like bacon, and, chanting on the streets, what do we want? Dead cops. What do we want now? That's Black Lives Matter. But it's okay. You point that out to somebody who's a radical leftist, they will just say, well, they were oppressed. So the oppressor, it doesn't matter what's done to them. Pick whatever group you want. It's okay to be racist if you're black against white. No, all racism is disgusting and wrong. I don't care what it is. If you hate somebody purely based on their skin color, that is disgusting. End of story. But because just label white people as the oppressor, other groups as the oppressed, well, it doesn't matter what you do. It's okay. It's justifiable. You're driven to it. Palestine and Israel. Oh, the oppressor is labeled Israel, even though they're just defending themselves, by and large. Okay, not perfect. I'm not saying they do everything perfectly. But you have rockets flying over, and every single opportunity, they kill Israelis. Look, if it was equal footing, you say, oh, but only a few Palestinians, or only a few Israelis have been killed in the whole conflict, and a lot of Palestinians are killed. Yes. Why? Because Israel's weapons are a lot better. And if Israel's weapons weren't a lot better, they wouldn't be here anymore. I'm not a Zionist. I'm not dispensationalist. I'm not a guy who just says, get all the Jews and stick them on planes and let's get them out to take back Israel. They need to be converted. They need to be saved. But it's the same thing. Label Israel the oppressor. And it doesn't matter what you do to them. So rational thinking just goes out the window, and it just becomes, well, here's the group I don't like, whatever they believe, they're the fascists, it's all just name-calling and virtue signaling of how we've moved on from that and all this kind of stuff, and the oppressor versus the oppressed. And usually this is drilled into people without even knowing, and probably even most of the lecturers even knowing that they're teaching this, that that's what they're teaching. Victimhood, victim status. The world owes me something. The world owes me free education, a job, and I don't get it. I have the right to rant and rave. I have the right to riot, destroy things like a child who's been deprived. That is why I hate socialism, because it says you have the right to other people's things. No, you do not. This is Paul Flynn. May God bless you all.